I think they experimented on some poor mundane woman, Clary said. But she couldn't take it when the baby was born, and she lost her mind. It's just, who would do something like that? One of Valentine's followers? The ones who never got caught? Maybe trying to carry on what he was doing? Maybe. Or just some demon-worshipping cult. There are plenty of them. Although, I can't imagine why anyone would want to make more creatures like Sebastian. Her voice gave a little jump of hatred when she said his name. His name's really Jonathan. Jonathan is Jace's name, said Isabel tightly. I won't call that monster by the same name my brother has. He's always going to be Sebastian to me. Clary had to admit Isabel had a point. She had a hard time thinking of him as Jonathan, too. She supposed it wasn't fair to the true Sebastian, but none of them had really known him. It was easier to slap a stranger's name onto Valentine's vicious son than call him something that made him feel closer to her family, closer to her life. Isabel spoke lightly, but Clary could tell her mind was working, ticking over various possibilities. Anyway, I'm glad you texted me when you did. I could tell from your message that something weird was going on, and frankly, I was bored. Everyone's off doing some secret thing with the conclave, and I didn't want to go because Simon was going to be there, and I hate him now. Simon is with the conclave? Clary was astonished. She had noticed that the Institute had seemed even more empty than usual when they'd arrived. Jace, of course, wasn't there, but she hadn't expected him to be, though she hadn't known why. I talked to him this morning, and he didn't say anything about doing something for them, Clary added. Isabel shrugged. It has something to do with vampire politics. That's all I know. Do you think he's all right? Isabel sounded exasperated. He doesn't need you to protect him anymore, Clary. He has the mark of Cain. He could get blown up, shot at, drowned, and stabbed, and he'd be just fine. She looked at Clary hard. I notice you didn't ask me why I hate Simon, she said. I assume you knew about the two-timing thing. I knew, Clary admitted. I'm sorry. Isabel waved her confession away. You're his best friend. It would have been weird if you didn't know. I should have told you, Clary said. It's just, I never got the sense you were that serious about Simon, you know? Isabel scowled. I wasn't. It's just, I thought he would take it seriously, at least, since I was so out of his league and everything. I guess I expected better from him than I do from other guys. Maybe, Clary said quietly, Simon shouldn't be dating someone who thinks they're out of his league. Isabel looked at her, and Clary felt herself flush. Sorry, your relationship is really none of my business. Isabel was twisting her dark hair up into a knot, something she did when she felt tense. No, it isn't. I mean, I could ask you why you texted me to come to the church and meet you and not Jace, but I haven't. I'm not stupid. I know something's wrong between you two, passionate alley makeout sessions notwithstanding. She looked keenly at Clary. Have the two of you slept together yet? Clary felt the blood rush into her face. What? I mean, no, we haven't, but I don't see what that has to do with anything. It doesn't, said Isabel, patting her knotted hair into place. That was just prurient curiosity. What's holding you back? Isabel. Clary pulled up her legs, wrapped her arms around her knees, and sighed. Nothing. We were just taking our time. I've never, you know. Jace has, said Isabel. I mean, I assume he has. I don't know for sure. But if you ever need anything, she let the sentence hang in the air. Need anything? Protection? You know, so you can be careful, Isabel said. She sounded as practical as if she were talking about extra buttons. You'd think the angel would have been foresighted enough to give us a birth control rune. But no dice. Of course I'd be careful, Clary spluttered, feeling her cheeks turn red. Enough, this is awkward. This is girl talk, said Isabel. You just think it's awkward because you've spent your whole life with Simon as your only friend, and you can't talk to him about Jace. That would be awkward.
And Jace really hasn't said anything to you? About what's bothering him? Clary said, in a small voice.
You promise? He didn't have to, Isabel said. The way you've been acting, and with Jace going around looking like someone just died, it's not like I wouldn't notice something was wrong. You should have come to talk to me sooner.
Is he at least all right? Clary asked very quietly.
Isabel stood up from the bed and looked down at her. No, she said. He is very much not all right.
Are you?
Clary shook her head.
I didn't think so, Isabel said.
To Simon's surprise, Camille, upon seeing the Shadow Hunters, didn't even try to stand her ground. She screamed and ran for the door, only to freeze when she realized it was daylight outside, and that exiting the bank would quickly incinerate her. She gasped and cowered back against the wall, her fangs bared, a low hiss coming from her throat. Simon stepped back as the Shadow Hunters of the Conclave swarmed around him, all in black like a murder of crows. He saw Jace, his face pale and set like white marble, slide a broadsword blade through one of the human servants as he passed him, as casually as a pedestrian might swat a fly. Maris stalked ahead, her flying black hair reminding Simon of Isabel. She dispatched the second cowering minion with a whipsaw movement of her seraph blade and advanced on Camille, her shining blade outstretched. Jace was beside her, and another Shadow Hunter, a tall man with black runes twining his forearms like vines, was on her other side. The rest of the Shadow Hunters had spread out and were canvassing the bank, sweeping it with those odd things they used, sensors, checking every corner for demon activity. They ignored the bodies of Camille's human servants, lying motionless in their pools of drying blood. They ignored Simon as well. He might as well have been another pillar for all the attention they paid him. Camille Belcourt, said Maris, her voice echoing off the marble walls. You have broken the law, and you are subject to the law's punishments. Will you surrender and come with us, or will you fight? Camille was crying, making no attempt to cover her tears, which were tinged with blood. They streaked her white face with red lines as she choked. Walker, and my archer. Maris looked baffled. She turned to the man on her left. What is she saying, Kadir?
Her human servants, he replied. I believe she is mourning their deaths.
Maris flipped her hand dismissively. It is against the law to make servants of human beings.
I made them before, downworlders were subject to your accursed laws, you bitch. They have been with me for 200 years. They were like children to me.
Maris's hand tightened on the hilt of her blade. What would you know of children? She whispered. What does your kind know of anything but destroying? Camille's tear-streaked face flashed for a moment with triumph.
I knew it, she said. Whatever else you might say, whatever lies you tell, you hate our kind, don't you?
Maris's face tightened. Take her, she said. Bring her to the sanctuary. Jace moved swiftly to one side of Camille and took hold of her. Kadir seized the other arm. Together they pinioned her between them. Camille Belcourt, you stand accused of the murder of humans, Maris intoned, and the murder of Shadow Hunters. You will be taken to the sanctuary, where you will be questioned. The sentence for the murder of Shadow Hunters is death, but it is possible, if you cooperate with us, your life will be spared. Do you understand? Asked Maris. Camille tossed her head defiantly.
There is only one man I will answer to, she said. If you do not bring him to me, I will tell you nothing. You can kill me, but I will tell you nothing.
Very well, said Maris. What man is that?
Camille bared her teeth. Magnus Bane.
Magnus Bane? Maris looked flabbergasted. The High Warlock of Brooklyn? Why do you want to talk to him?
I will answer to him, Camille said again. Or I will answer to no one.
And that was that. She said not another word. As she was dragged away by the Shadow Hunters, Simon watched her go. He did not feel as he thought he would, triumphant. He felt hollow and strangely sick to his stomach. He looked down at the bodies of the slain servants. He hadn't liked them much either, but they hadn't asked to be what they were. Not really. In a way, maybe neither had Camille. but she was a monster to Nephilim anyway. And maybe not just because she had killed Shadowhunters. Maybe there was no way, really, for them to think of her as anything else. Camilla had been pushed through the portal. Jace stood on the other side of it, gesturing impatiently for Simon to follow.
Are you coming or not?
He called.
Whatever else you might say, whatever lies you tell, you hate that kind.
Coming,
Simon said, and moved reluctantly forward. Chapter 12, Sanctuary.
What do you think Camille wants to see Magnus for? Simon asked.
He and Jace were standing against the back wall of the sanctuary, which was a massive room attached to the main body of the Institute through a narrow passageway. It wasn't part of the Institute per se. It had been left deliberately unconsecrated in order that it might be used as a holding place for demons and vampires. Sanctuaries, Jace had informed Simon, had gone out of fashion somewhat since projecting had been invented. But every once in a while, they found a use for theirs. Apparently, this was one of those times. It was a big room, stone-bound and pillared, with an equally stone-bound entryway beyond a wide set of double doors. The entryway led to the corridor connecting the room to the Institute. Huge gouges in the stone floor indicated that whatever had been caged here over the years had been pretty nasty and big. Simon couldn't help wondering how many enormous rooms full of pillars he was going to have to spend time in. Camille was standing against one of the pillars, her arms behind her, guarded on either side by Shadowhunter warriors. Maris was pacing back and forth, occasionally conferring with Kadir, clearly trying to sort out some kind of plan. There were no windows in the room, for obvious reasons, but witchlight torches burned everywhere, giving the whole scene a peculiar whitish cast.
I don't know, Jace said. Maybe she wants fashion tips.
Ha, Simon said. Who's that guy with your mother? He looks familiar.
That's Kadir, said Jace. You probably met his brother Malik. He died in the attack on Valentine's ship. Kadir is the second most important person in the Conclave, after my mom. She relies on him a lot.
As Simon watched, Kadir pulled Camille's arms behind her back, so they circled the pillar and chained them at her wrists. The vampire gave a little scream.
Blessed metal, said Jace, without a flicker of emotion. It burns them.
Damn, Simon thought. You mean you. I'm just like her. I'm no different just because you know me.
Camille was whimpering. Kadir stood back, his face impassive. Runes, dark against his skin, twined the entirety of his arms and throat. He turned to say something to Maris. Simon caught the words. Magnus. And fire message.
Magnus again, said Simon. But isn't he traveling?
Magnus and Camille are both really old, said Jace. I suppose it's not that odd that they know each other.
He shrugged, seemingly uninterested in the topic.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure they're going to wind up summoning Magnus back here. Maris wants information, and she wants it bad. She knows Camille wasn't killing those Shadowhunters just for blood. There are easier ways to get blood.
Simon thought fleetingly of Marine and felt sick.
Well, he said, trying to sound unconcerned, I guess that means Alec will be back, so that's good, right?
Sure.
Jace's voice sounded lifeless. He didn't look all that great either. The whitish light in the room cast the angles of his cheekbones into a new and sharper relief, showing that he'd lost weight. His fingernails were bitten down to bloody stumps, and there were dark shadows under his eyes.
At least your plan worked,
Simon added, trying to inject some cheer into Jace's misery. It had been Jace's idea to have Simon take a picture with his cell phone and send it to the Conclave, which would allow them to portal to where he was.
It was a good idea.
I knew it would work.
Jace sounded bored by the compliment. He looked up as the double doors to the Institute swung open, and Isabel came through them, her black hair swinging. She looked around the room, giving Camille and the other Shadowhunters barely a glance, and came toward Jace and Simon, her boots clattering against the stone.
What's this all about yanking poor Magnus and Alec back from their vacation? Isabel demanded. They have opera tickets.
Jace explained, while Isabel stood with her hands on her hips, ignoring Simon completely. Fine, she said when he was done.
But the whole thing's ridiculous. She's just stalling for time. What could she possibly have to say to Magnus?
She glanced back over her shoulder at Camille, who was now not just manacled, but bound to the pillar with lengths of silvery gold chain. It crisscrossed her body across her torso, her knees, and even her ankles, holding her totally immobile.
Is that blessed metal?
Jace nodded. The manacles are lined to protect her wrists, but if she moves too much, he made a sizzling sound. Simon, remembering the way his hands had burned when he touched the Star of David in his cell in Idris, the way his skin had run with blood, had to fight the urge to snap at him. "Well, while you were trapping vampires, I was uptown fighting off a Hydra demon," Isabel said. "With Clary." Jace, who had evinced only the barest interest in anything going on around him until now, jerked upright. "With Clary? You took her demon hunting with you?" "Isabel." "Of course not. She was already well into the fight by the time I got there."
"But how did you know?"
"She texted me," Isabel said, "so I went." She examined her nails, which were, as usual, perfect.
"She texted you?"
Jace grabbed Isabel by the wrist.
"Is she all right? Did she get hurt?"
Isabel looked down at his hand gripping her wrist and then back up to his face. If he was hurting her, Simon couldn't tell, but the look on her face could have cut glass, as could the sarcasm in her voice.
"Yeah, she's bleeding to death upstairs, but I thought I'd avoid telling you right away, because I like to draw the suspense out."
Jace, as if suddenly conscious of what he was doing, let go of Isabel's wrist.
"She's here?"
"She's upstairs," Isabel said, "resting." But Jace was already gone, running for the entryway doors. He burst through them and vanished. Isabel, looking after him, shook her head.
"You can't really have thought he was going to do anything else," said Simon.
For a moment she said nothing. He wondered if maybe she was just planning to ignore anything he said for the rest of eternity.
"I know," she said finally. "I just wish I knew what was going on with them.
I'm not sure they know."
Isabel was worrying at her bottom lip. She looked very young all of a sudden, and unusually conflicted for Isabel. Something was clearly going on with her, and Simon waited quietly until she appeared to come to a decision.
"I don't want to be like that," she said. "Come on, I want to talk to you."
She started to head toward the Institute doors.
"You do?"
Simon was astonished. She spun and glared at him.
"Right now I do, but I can't promise how long it'll last."
Simon held his hands up.
"I want to talk to you, Iz, but I can't go into the Institute."
A line appeared between her eyebrows.
"Why?"
She broke off, looking from him to the doors, to Camille and back again.
"All right, how did you get in here then?"
"Portal," said Simon. "But Jay said there's an entryway that leads to a set of doors that go outside, so vampires can enter here at night."
He pointed to a narrow door set in the wall a few feet away. It was secured with a rusting iron bolt, as if it hadn't been used in a while. Isabel shrugged.
"Fine."
The bolt made a screeching noise when she yanked it back, sending flakes of rust into the air in a fine red spray. Beyond the door was a small stone room, like the vestry of a church, and a set of doors that most likely led outside. There were no windows, but cold air crept around the edges of the doors, making Isabel and her short dress shiver.
"Look, Isabel," Simon said,
figuring that the onus was on him to start the discussion.
"I really am sorry about what I did. There's no excuse."
"No, there isn't," Isabel said.
"And while you're at it, you might want to tell me why you're hanging around with the guy who turned Meyer into a werewolf."
Simon told her the story Jordan had recounted to him, trying to keep his explanation as even-handed as he could. He felt like it was at least important to explain to Isabel that he hadn't known who Jordan really was at first, and also that Jordan regretted what he'd done.
"Not that that makes it okay," he finished. "But you know, we've all done bad things."
But he couldn't bring himself to tell her about Maureen. Not right now.
"I know," Isabel said. "And I've heard of the Praetor Lupus. If they're willing to have him as a member, he can't be a complete washout, I guess."
She looked at Simon a little more closely.
"Although, I don't get why you need someone to protect you. You have..."
She pointed at her forehead.
"I can't go through the rest of my life with people running at me every day and the mark blowing them up," Simon said. "I need to know who's trying to kill me. Jordan's helping with that. Jace, too."
"Do you really think Jordan's helping you?"
"Because the Clave has some pull with the Praetor.
We could get him replaced."
Simon hesitated.
"Yeah," he said. "I really do think he's helping. And I can't always rely on the Clave."
"Okay."
Isabel leaned back against the wall.
"Do you ever wonder why I'm so different from my brothers?" she asked without preamble. "Alec and Jace, I mean."
Simon blinked.
You mean aside from the whole thing where you're a girl and they aren't?
No, not that, idiot. I mean, look at the two of them. They have no problem falling in love. They're both in love. The forever kind. They're done. Look at Jace. He loves Clary like there's nothing else in the world, and there never will be. Alex the same. MX.
Her voice caught.
I don't know what it would have been like for him, but he trusted everyone. And as you might have noticed, I don't trust anyone.
People are different, Simon said, trying to sound understanding. It doesn't mean that they're happier than you.
Sure it does, Isabel said.
You think I don't know that?
She looked at Simon hard.
You know my parents. Not well.
They had never been terribly eager to meet Isabel's vampire boyfriend, a situation that hadn't done much to ameliorate Simon's feeling that he was merely the latest in a long line of undesirable suitors.
Well, you know they were both in the circle, but I bet you didn't know it was all my mom's idea. My dad was never really enthusiastic about Valentine or any of it. And then when everything happened and they got banished and they realized they'd practically wrecked their lives, I think he blamed her. But they already had Alec, and were going to have me, so he stayed, even though I think he kind of wanted to leave. And then, when Alec was about 9, he found someone else.
Wow, Simon said.
Your dad cheated on your mom? That's awful.
She told me, said Isabel.
I was about 13. She told me that he would have left her, but they found out she was pregnant with Max, so they stayed together and he broke it off with the other woman. My mom didn't tell me who she was. She just told me that you couldn't really trust men. And she told me not to tell anyone.
And did you tell anyone?
Not until now, Isabel said.
Simon thought of a younger Isabel, keeping the secret, never telling anyone, hiding it from her brothers, knowing things about their family that they would never know.
She shouldn't have asked you to do that, he said, suddenly angry. That wasn't fair.
Maybe, said Isabel. I thought it made me special. I didn't think about how it might have changed me. But I watched my brothers give their hearts away, and I think, don't you know better? Hearts are breakable. And I think, even when you heal, you're never what you were before.
Maybe you're better, Simon said. I know I'm better.
You mean Clary, said Isabel.
Because she broke your heart? Into little pieces. You know, when someone prefers their own brother over you, it isn't a confidence booster. I thought maybe once she realized it would never work out with Jace, she'd give up and come back to me, but I finally figured out that she'd never stop loving Jace, whether it was going to work out with him or not. And I knew that if she was only with me because she didn't have him, I'd rather be alone. So I ended it.
I didn't know you broke it off with her, said Isabel.
I assumed that I had no self-respect, Simon smiled wryly.
I thought you were still in love with Clary, Isabel said, and that you couldn't be serious about anyone else.
Because you pick guys who will never be serious about you, said Simon, so you never need to be serious about them.
Isabel's eyes shone when she looked at him, but she said nothing.
I care about you, Simon said. I've always cared about you.
She took a step toward him. They were standing fairly close together in the small room, and he could hear the sound of her breathing and the fainter pulse of her heartbeat underneath. She smelled of shampoo and sweat and gardenia perfume and Shadowhunter blood. The thought of blood made him remember Maureen, and his body tensed. Isabel noticed, of course she noticed. She was a warrior, her senses finely tuned to even the slightest movement in others, and drew back, her expression tightening.
All right, she said. Well, I'm glad we talked.
Isabel.
But she was already gone. He went after her into the sanctuary, but she was moving fast. By the time the vestry door shut behind him, she was halfway across the room.
He gave up and watched as she disappeared through the double doors into the institute, knowing he couldn't follow.
Clary sat up, shaking her head to clear the grogginess. It took her a moment to remember where she was. In a spare bedroom in the institute, the only light in the room, the illumination that streamed in through the single high window, it was blue light, twilight light. She lay twisted in the blanket, her jeans, jacket, and shoes were stacked neatly on a chair near the bed,
and beside her was Jace, looking down at her, as if she had conjured him up by dreaming of him. He was sitting on the bed, wearing his gear, as if he had just come from a fight, and his hair was tousled, the dim light from the window illuminating shadows under his eyes, the hollows of his temples, the bones of his cheeks. In this light, he had the extreme and almost unreal beauty of a Modigliani painting, all elongated planes and angles. She rubbed at her eyes, blinking away sleep.
"What time is it?" she said.
"How long?" He pulled her toward him and kissed her, and for a moment she froze, suddenly very conscious that all she was wearing was a thin t-shirt and underwear. Then she went boneless against him. It was the sort of lingering kiss that turned her insides to water, the sort of kiss that might have made her feel that nothing was wrong, that things were as they had been before, and he was only glad to see her. But when his hands went to lift the hem of her t-shirt, she pushed them away.
"No," she said.
Her fingers wrapped around his wrists. "You can't just keep grabbing at me every time you see me. It's not a substitute for actually talking." He took a ragged breath and said, "Why did you text Isabel instead of me? If you were in trouble..." "Because I knew she'd come," said Clary. "And I don't know that about you. Not right now."
"If something had happened to you,
then I guess you would have heard about it eventually. You know, when you deigned to actually pick up the phone." She was still holding his wrists. She let go of them now and sat back. It was hard, physically hard, to be close to him like this and not touch him. But she forced her hands down by her sides and kept them there. "Either you tell me what's wrong, or you can get out of the room." His lips parted, but he said nothing. She didn't think she'd spoken to him this harshly in a long time.
"I'm sorry," he said finally. "I mean, I know, with the way I've been acting, you've got no reason to listen to me, and I probably shouldn't have come in here. But when Isabel said you were hurt, I couldn't stop myself."
"Some burns," Clary said. "Nothing that matters. Everything that happens to you matters to me."
"Well, that certainly explains why you haven't called me back once, and the last time I saw you, you ran away without telling me why. It's like dating a ghost."
Jace's mouth quirked up slightly at the side.
"Not exactly. Isabel actually dated a ghost. She could tell you."
"No," Clary said. "It was a metaphor. And you know exactly what I mean." For a moment he was silent. Then he said, "Let me see the burns." She held out her arms. There were harsh red splotches on the insides of her wrists where the demon's blood had spattered. He took her wrists very lightly, looking at her for permission first, and turned them over. She remembered the first time he had touched her, in the street outside Java Jones, searching her hands for marks she didn't have.
"Demon blood," he said. "They'll go away in a few hours."
"Do they hurt?"
Clary shook her head.
"I didn't know," he said.
"I didn't know you needed me."
Her voice shook.
"I always need you."
He bent his head and kissed the burn on her wrist. A flare of heat coursed through her like a hot spike that went from her wrist to the pit of her stomach.
"I didn't realize," he said.
He kissed the next burn on her forearm, and then the next, moving up her arm to her shoulder, the pressure of his body bearing her back until she was lying against the pillows looking up at him. He propped himself on his elbows so as not to crush her with his weight and looked down at her. His eyes always darkened when they kissed, as if desire changed their color in some fundamental way. He touched the white star mark on her shoulder, the one they both had, that marked them as the children of those who had had contact with angels.
"I know I've been acting strange lately," he said.
But it's not you. I love you.